Going on, everybody. Welcome back to the Going the Distance podcast presented by ImmaculateSports.com. Twitter's at ImmacSports.
Instagram is also ImmacSports.
TikTok, YouTube, Immaculate Sports. It's episode 211, week three in the books for the NFL season. We still don't know a thing. A lot of surprising starts in a good and a bad way. But it's not time to write them off yet. That's why we're doing power rankings. And, of course, only one more week for the baseball season, too, Kyle.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to be a fun episode this week. Kind of just what we did a couple of weeks ago, where it's like a status check in the MLB, the NFL, and in college football. But it also has a ton of topics within that as well, of course. So we'll get started with the opener. And there's a couple crazy things that we saw this past week. You can go football, you can go baseball with Shohei and his 50-50 season, or now 53-55 season, whatever he's at right now. I decided to go with something that meant a little bit more to me specifically due to how long I've been watching this guy. And Jaden Daniels, was a big fan of him at ASU. Skyler knows that 100%. Mm-hmm. Once he got to LSU, kind of had a bit of a struggle there. And then eventually, you know, we saw what he did last year winning the Heisman. I wanted him to get picked to the Raiders extremely bad. That's been well documented on this podcast, of course. Goes to the Commanders, and he's exactly the player I expected him to be. He had a ridiculous outing last night against the Cincinnati Bengals on Monday Night Football. Only had two completions. That's the second time already, I believe, that he's had a game where he scored on every single possession that he's had except for kneel downs. And so he's been extremely efficient with his supporting cast that's headlined by Terry McLaurin. And really, that's about it. So he doesn't have a ton of guys that he's doing it with. And he's been making that Washington Commanders offense look like one of the best in the league so far in the first 2 weeks of the season. So I love what he's doing right now. Wish it was in the silver and black. But just seeing him succeed is enough for me to be happy.
All right. Well, Kyle, on Thursday night, us Jets fans got to experience something that has never really happened in my lifetime. A complete beatdown of the New England Patriots. Aaron looked like Perk Rogers out there, man. He was so locked in, threading the needle over the middle to the tight ends all night. Another situation where, like, the last guy to throw to tight ends for the Jets was Mark Sanchez. It hasn't happened since then. And just imagine what they're going to look like when he finally gets on the same page with Garrett Wilson. I mean, just so many different guys stepped up in injury relief too. Chuck Clark, Jamien Sherwood, Olufashinu, Tack McKinley, Solomon Thomas at fullback, and of course, Braylon Allen, the youngest player in the league. And oh my goodness, Will McDonald, an absolute freak. Some guys need to apologize to him because his 5.5 sacks so far this year, only behind Hutchinson. Anyways, the Jets win 24-3, and we got Bo Nix on Sunday. So things are definitely pointing upwards after that San Francisco loss in week one.
Huh. Moving on to player, pitcher, rookie of the week in the MLB. Player of the week seems pretty obvious, Skyler. We've talked about this in the past for sometimes there's weeks where it's just like there's not really a guy that sticks out. There was definitely a guy that stuck out this week.
Yeah, Shohei Ohtani just had one of the best weeks in baseball history. Not only was he 15 for 23, good for a .652 batting average, at over a 2.0 OPS, 5 homers, 13 ribbies, 7 stolen bases. He's now the only member of the 50-50 club, something I definitely did not think was possible since his former teammate Mike Trout couldn't do it. I thought that was the prototypical 50-50. But here we are, man. Shohei did it.
Yeah, this is a week that will go down in history for Shohei. The 15 for 23, like you said, is just ridiculous. It looked better if it was, we did Monday to Monday, not Tuesday to Tuesday, because he also had, I think, 4 RBIs in last Monday. So he would have had 17 RBIs, but still, regardless, 5 homers, 13 RBIs, 7 stolen bases, like you said, is a ridiculous week for the most talented player that this sport has ever seen in its 160-year history. It's crazy to think this guy can pitch too, and not just be a pitcher, but be one of the best in the world at that as well too. The Shohei's speed is something that we didn't we were familiar with, and we saw glimpses of it in the Angels, but they just didn't let him run too much. Maybe that's because if he was pitching too, and they didn't want to risk injury that way. But the Dodgers just letting him loose and saying, Shohei, run whenever you want, has been a beauty to see. And I never thought I'd see a 50-50 season, especially from Shohei, just because I always decided to be like, tone it down. We don't want you to get injured, because that's kind of what we were used to with Trout specifically over his career and his injury battles. But Shohei's done this perfectly this season. He's the MVP of the league, or of the NL, that is. I'm not taking shots at Aaron Judge there. But this is the best player in the game, and I really do not think it's close right now. So Shohei Ohtani, player of the week, player of the month, player of the year, player of the millennium. Call me glazing. I don't care. It's facts. But moving on to pitcher of the week.
I'll give an honorable mention to our guy Skubal. He looked like he locked up the Cy Young today for the AL side. But I'm actually going to have my first reliever of the year, Luke Weaver. 4 1/3 innings. It's not the largest sample size, but it's the importance of those innings. The Yankees have been desperately needing some help in the bullpen. Weaver stepped up big time. 10 Ks, no earned run, 2 for 2 on save opportunities in that Clay Holmes spot. And that's exactly what they're looking for to wrap things up here.
Yeah, I actually also went with Luke Weaver. I thought that'd be something that we both didn't get to combine, but I'm completely okay with it being that way. Because Luke Weaver's been really good this year, and his transformation as a player has been pretty remarkable as well, too, considering he was kind of the odd man out in Arizona and in St. Louis at times as well, too. I think he was in Cincinnati for a stint, if I'm recalling correctly. Gets moved to the bullpen, adds velocity. He had to have done something in the offseason to really make his stuff tick up, because he's really dominant now. One of the highest K rates in the league. And we saw that this past week with 10 Ks and just 4 1/3 innings. He's really good. He's been really good all season. And if you told me 3 years ago that Luke Weaver would be the potential closer for the Yankees going into the playoff stretch, I mean, nobody would believe you, but that's just how crazy baseball is. And especially in the bullpen. How about rookie of the week?
I couldn't just pick one, so I'm going to have co-winners again. We'll start off with Luis Angel Acuña, the brother of Ronald, for his really fast start in relief for the injured Francisco Lindor. And, of course, I couldn't leave out Paul Skeens either, because he does it again, just like he has all season long. 5 shutouts, 9 Ks in Cincinnati, and basically killing all the vibes in Cincinnati since their manager was fired, too, right after.
Yeah, I'm going Luis Angel as my winner for Rookie of the Week. I think in the role that he's had to fill since he came up was one of the hardest shoes to fill in the big leagues. Lindor's been this guy who's an MVP candidate the entire season, kind of seen as the face of this Mets comeback throughout the entire season to be where they are in the postseason hunt. And when he gets hurt, I don't want to say you can write him off, but that's something that can happen. In those scenarios, your star player gets hurt and the team just takes a huge morale hit. It did not at all with Luis Angel Acuña coming up and taking his spot playing shortstop. He's been ridiculously good. The Mets offense has been ridiculously good over the past couple of weeks as well, too. And there's a reason why they are not just fighting for a playoff spot right now, but holding a playoff spot against a team like the Braves and some other good squads as well, too. So Luis Angel Acuña, Rookie of the Week. On to the NFL player, defensive player, and Rookie of the Week here as well, too. Skyler, who'd you choose as your player of the week?
Well, we finally got that offensive explosion across most of the league we've been looking for, but I still think there was one massive outlier. It's the Red Rifle, and it's no direct knock at the Raiders, because Andy was on one on Sunday. 319 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks, with not a lot of help out there for him. So I was definitely not expecting this one, man. That's for sure.
Yeah, I have co-players of the week. I started off with Juwan Jennings for his career outing on Sunday with 11 catches, 175 yards, and 3 touchdowns. I was debating and not put him on here because they lost, but it wasn't his fault at all. He had a ridiculous day in LA over the weekend, but Andy Dalton as well deserves to be talked about. I think even looking past the stats, he was great statistically, of course, but he was making throws I just don't see quarterbacks make in the NFL. And that's not like, I don't want to be like, oh, he was really, really good against a good defense. The Raiders did not play good, but the throws that this guy was making, just go back and watch them. And I think about the quarterbacks that could make or would even attempt to make these throws. Have to be like a Fitzpatrick or a Flacco, of these guys that aren't scared of taking risks. And sometimes it just works out perfectly. And it did for Dalton. He was spectacular on Sunday and definitely deserved to be, you know, player of the week for this week three of the NFL season. Defensive player of the week.
I'm going to go with Jalen Jones, the defensive back from Indianapolis, because he had two picks on Caleb Williams. The former seventh round pick gets a start with all the injuries on this Indy defense. And he came through. Also, shout out to his teammate, my guy Latu, who finally breaks out off the edge since he had a much slower start than your guy Jared Verse, which was your pick for Rookie of the Year. So looking like it's going to be a really good battle for that race too.
Yeah, I was with Jalen Jones for Defensive Player of the Week. There wasn't a, you know, crazy stat line from anybody, but Jalen Jones and his two picks, the first two-pick outing of the year from anyone that we've seen for a seventh rounder just a year ago, only in his second season. He's made an impact in that Colts defense that needs him and a whole lot of other things to go, because Indy's got to keep it going somehow, and they don't look the greatest, even though they got the win on Sunday. On to Rookie of the Week.
Yeah, Caleb took a massive step, speaking of him, this week, but they still got a lot of work to do in Chi-Town. The honors will go to Jaden Daniels, of course. 38 points last night in Cincinnati. They haven't punted since week one. Almost 300 yards from scrimmage, three touchdowns, zero turnover-worthy plays. He's really hitting on all cylinders right now, and really the only thing to worry about is his check-down guy, Eckler, has a concussion. So maybe someone else steps up as a safety valve and they'll keep it going next week.
Yeah, Jaden Daniels has to be the Rookie of the Week. 21 for 23, the highest completion rate of any rookie in a game in NFL history, I believe, or at least in the modern era. 254 passing yards, two touchdowns through the air, as well as 39 rushing yards and a touchdown on the ground as well, too, on a perfectly executed read option. I think, you know, you can think 21 of 23 and said, oh, well, he's just checking down the whole time. He was not. He was taking deep shots to McLaurin, and he was putting them in the bucket, especially the two times that he went deep to McLaurin. The first one was, I think, 57, 58 yards, and, I mean, it couldn't have been a better throw. And then the throw that he made to practically win the game, or at least clinch the game, on, I think it was like third and four, and he took a deep shot to McLaurin down the right sideline, and just, I mean, I don't know how he makes that throw.
He got rocked, too.
He got rocked. He threw it pretty much as soon as it got snapped to him. He just chucked it up right away. McLaurin ran right under it. Didn't have to, you know, speed up or slow down to get the ball. It just was right in the bucket for him. And it just shows how good of an arm and how talented Jaden Daniels is, because this guy's also, you know, has the ability to rush for 1,000 yards in a season as well, too. And I think we could definitely see that, if not this year, in the coming years. On to the power rankings. We're talking MLB first, our biweekly rankings that we've done pretty much every other week the entire season, with a few exceptions. This is our last power rankings of the regular season, that is. Maybe we'll do it in the playoffs, but with the playoffs around the corner, this has got to be our last one. Yeah. Next week, we'll do our playoff predictions. It's kind of a weird time spot. We'll be like through like a couple wild card games, I believe, maybe one or two, because the playoffs do start next Tuesday, so it's just kind of a weird scheduling conflict, but we'll get that sorted out for you. But the power rankings this week, still 15 teams. Do you have anybody off of your list that you do want to talk about, though?
Yeah, Boston and Tampa still mathematically alive somehow, but the Cubbies are not. They will not be coming back on the list this year.
Yeah, the Cubbies are the team that I took off my list. They were at 15, so just one spot drop off, you know, or two, who knows. But they are not on my list this week. So number 15, Skyler, who'd you choose?
Number 15, I got Kansas City. They're dropping down from the 11th spot. It's just a really rough stretch for them. They've lost seven in a row now, I believe it is, if they didn't play today already. You don't want to be the lineup that gets cold right before the postseason. Even if they do hold on to that last spot, the team above them, who we'll talk about in a minute, just one game back.
Yeah, I have the team behind them as my number 15 team, the Minnesota Twins, moving down two spots from the last rankings, 81 and 75 right now. They're also cold, just like the Royals. Maybe not as dramatically as the Royals, that loses their two in a row and won three games out of the last 10. Kansas City, like you said, a bit worse, but they're on the outside looking in still. And I think the point with Kansas City that I'll make in a little bit is that they're on the inside looking out. So that's a big thing to be with just, you know, 5 to 6 games to go left in the season. And Minnesota, who I had as a top tier contender just a month ago, is at risk of not making the playoffs. Number 14.
Number 14 is where I have the Twins. I decided not to move them at all. This is where I had them last time because they had a slightly better time. The last 14 days, 5-7 record. It's not good at all to be there, but it's better than Kansas City. We know it's a heat check team. I'm not going to count them out yet. But obviously keeping them down at 14 should say something about both of these teams.
Yeah, another thing with Minnesota, too, they are already down 4-0 against Miami in the bottom of the second. So they are not in a good spot right now. The Tigers haven't already won their game today. Number 14 for me is going to be the Seattle Mariners, who are also on the outside looking in, but have been playing better ball as of late, 81 and 76, winners of 7 out of the last 10. And the offense is starting to be better, I would say, but the pitching is just as good as it's been the entire season. And we're seeing that so far on this, you know, stretch of the last couple of days. They still got a chance, a game and a half out. They need, you know, the Royals to continue to be bad, the Twins to continue to be bad, or the Tigers to be bad in order to be into a spot. But you never know. They still got a chance, or they can take the division if they sweep the Astros and then have a good weekend as well, too. But that's a long ways to go. So, of course, they're my 14 team right now. Number 13.
I did bump up Seattle from the 15 spot because they had a much better week. It might be too late for them, like you said, but still 8-5 in the last 14. They do have two more games against Houston, but then at home against Oakland to close it out. That's, you want to be at home for those last three games. And I think they have probably an even better shot than Minnesota, considering what's happening today.
Yeah, my number 13 team is going to be where I slot the Kansas City Royals, 82 and 74. Like you said, losers of 7 in a row. This is not the time that you want to be bold, and that's exactly what they are. They moved down two spots from the last rankings. They got to get in. They got to play at home to be good, and that's just not trending that way right now. Number 12.
Number 12, it's one of the most confusing teams and unfortunate of the season. It's the Atlanta Braves. They're dropping down from the 10th spot for me. 7-5 over the last 14 days, not games, but days. And Austin Riley's out for the year now. Things are not looking good. A game and a half back. They have to play the Mets three more times. They are up 3-0 right now, though. And Kansas City could be their saving grace if Kansas City falls apart those last 3 days.
I also have Atlanta as my number 12 team. They do not move from the last rankings. They are the NL team that's on the outside looking in right now, a game and a half back. Obviously, they kind of control their own destiny with three games against the Mets right now, and then the season of as well, of course. But still not a great spot to be in as we're talking. However, the team does have a track record of you know, coming up big in spots before. They're already up 3-0, like you said. Tonight against the Mets, and Severino has 70 pitches in 3 innings. So maybe getting into the bullpen early is good as well, too. But not looking good for the 2021 World Series champions. Number 11.
This is where I got the Tigers. Last week, an honorable mention, I said around the 18 spot maybe, because what a month. 9-3 so far the last 14 times. I'll just say this. If I say a record that's about 14 games, I'm referring to the last time we did our rankings, just to stop the confusion. But seriously, that pitching staff is nuts. Now Jackson Jobe gets a crack at it, too. I really like what they're doing so far. I probably wouldn't mind running into them in the playoffs, though. That's the thing, unless it's Skubal.
Yeah, number 11 for me is going to be where I slot the Cleveland Guardians. One of the better records in the MLB at 90-67. But I still don't feel confident in this team's starting rotation. The bullpen is the best part about this team. I will say that. But I just have a feeling that they might be a little overworked once we get to the playoffs. And relying on so many guys to do good scares me. So I have Cleveland moving down two spots to number 11. Number 10.
At the 10th spot, I got the Diamondbacks knocked back a little bit. They've been playing mostly 500 ball since their real hot streak after the All-Star break. It's a very big series at home against the Padres to end it off. If they can just split all the way through here to finish off the year, they'll be right at the same spot they've been at right here at the 10.
Number 10 for me moving up four spots is going to be the Detroit Tigers. This has been the hottest team in baseball since the second half started. And they showed that again today, getting a close victory against the Tampa Bay Rays. 83-74, they now control their own destiny. That's a huge thing late in the season. Winners of three in a row. The bullpen's good. The lineup's got some fire in it now. And they have the best pitcher in baseball right now in Tarik Skubal. And that's something that you can, if you have the best pitcher in baseball, especially in a wild card series like this current format where it's only three games, if you win game one, you got to feel damn good about your spot. And I think they have a really good shot against anybody that they're playing in a game one of Tarik's on the mound. Number nine.
Number nine, I got the Astros finally moving them up. I had them at 12 for a while there, but another week of above 500 ball. It's not as dominant as it was, but we know this team all too well. They have a guy for every position, every situation, and they just got to get into the tournament.
Number nine for me is going to be where I slot the Milwaukee Brewers. I've been a big non-believer of this team. That's been well documented the entire season. Again, just like the Cleveland Guardians have one of the better records in baseball, 89-67. I just don't trust them. I really don't. And maybe there's not a tangible thing that I don't trust. But if they get out in the wild card series, because they will be likely playing in the wild card series, or they can pretty much clinched at that point being the three seed, I won't be shocked. So the number nine spot for Milwaukee. On to number eight.
At the eight spot is where I have Milwaukee. I'm finally dropping them down to reality from the five spot because it's another team that's been hovering around 500. You know, compared to some of the AL teams on this list, the Astros and the Tigers and Seattle and the same range, I would take them. Unfortunately for them, they're in the National League, and it's going to be a brutal race to even get to the second round. So these guys are going to have to put up some more runs than they're used to.
Number 18 for me is going to be the Arizona Diamondbacks, 87-70. They're a good team. I think they're pretty well-rounded, especially in the lineup departments. The only thing that holds them back is their bullpen, and that's why they're not higher on this list for me, because I do think every other part about them is very, very legit. Number seven.
Number seven's where I got the Guardians. I moved them up a couple spots because they've been a little better now. They got to that 90 win mark. And, you know, we mentioned this with the Padres. 90 wins isn't really a big deal for them, but for a team like Cleveland on such a small market, right? This is massive. Here's another team with the nasty bullpen. You just gotta get to a certain amount of runs, you know, and most of the time you can close them out.
Number seven for me is going to be the Baltimore Orioles sitting at 86-70. I don't think anybody expected Baltimore to have this bad of a season. I know it's not technically a bad season, but after winning over 100 games last year, I think everybody expected them to kind of have an encore to that and, you know, go win 105 games and have this really good starting rotation and this bullpen. It just didn't work out that way. They dealt with a lot of injuries, especially with their arms, not having their closer the entire year, and Felix Bautista obviously completely sucks. But I don't think they've done a good job managing those injuries as well too. They didn't do enough at the deadline. The guy that they got to be their closer this year, they ended up DFAing and Craig Kimbrel. So he's not even on the squad anymore. They moved down three spots in my rankings, and I don't feel nearly as confident about this team as I did, you know, just a couple of months ago. Number six.
Yeah, for me, Baltimore also falling out of the top five for the first time all season. You don't love to see all the moving pieces and certain guys slumping right before October, but this team's always had a next man up mentality. I think they're just praying they don't have to see Scooble in the first round. We'll see what happens, man. It's a really young team.
Number six for me is going to be where I slot the Houston Astros. 85-72 might not be the best record, but their track record over the last 10 years proves to me that they should be a top seven or eight team in the MLB as of right now. They are battling some injuries. They avoided injury with Jose Altuve, which is big, but Yordan Alvarez is out for a couple of days right now. We don't really know the extent of that. But if he's not healthy in the playoffs, that's a big knock because he's, you know, a top two, three, five hitter in the MLB, especially in the playoffs. And if they don't have them, have him, that's huge. Their bullpen, their starting rotation, I like a ton, though. And I think they'll be just fine, especially if Yordan is healthy. So with the Yordan injury, though, they moved down one spot. Number five.
At number five, I got San Diego moving up from the eighth spot. Again, just been one of the hottest teams in baseball this season. Another stretch of 9-3 over 2 weeks. And for them, it's about getting guys back on time. We saw Tatis now perfectly settled in at the top of the lineup. And those four starters, I mean, I'm not necessarily a San Diego fan this offseason, but how could you not root for Cease, King, Darvish, Musgrove, all looking really good over the past couple weeks? Those guys are going to be hard to knock out.
Yeah, number five for me, the highest ranking they've been this entire season, moving up five spots, is the New York Mets for their 87-69 record. With Lindor, like I talked about with Luis Angel during our Rookie of the Week segment, they could have just sunk right then and there, and they did the exact opposite. They've gotten better since Lindor has hurt, so maybe it's a point for him not being the MVP, John Heyman. But regardless, this Mets team is fun. They're exciting. I'm not sure exactly how they navigate the postseason starting pitching, especially with, you know, Senga being out the entire season and not really having him except for one start, I believe, this entire year. So I'm curious who they give the ball to on a game one, on a game two, and a game three. But really, whoever it is, they feel confident in. And with how their lineup's been playing, I'd feel confident in whoever I throw out there because I know my team's going to go score some runs. So the New York Mets, number five. How about that? Number four?
Yeah, well, I got the Mets at the four spot here, up from six last time, but it's 11 total spots in just 1 month. A massive series win against Philly. And now they have the chance to knock out Atlanta themselves this week. They can do it themselves. Just get it out of the way. Might not be tonight, but still looking really good for these guys. Another team that it's all about the next man up, and they don't seem to care who's out there.
Number four for me is going to be where I slot the San Diego Padres. What a second half it's been for this team. And when you look at the building of their roster right now, the makeup of it, there's not a lot of teams that are going to be going into the playoffs with a better situation. Like you said, the four guys that you have that are going to get the ball for playoff starts, King, Cease, Musgrove, and Darvish, you all feel very confident in. Whoever's taking the ball from them and coming in the fifth, sixth, seventh inning, whatever it may be, you feel extremely confident in because they got about five or six different relievers that have been dominant this entire season. The lineup has a great makeup to it, whether it's power, whether it's contact, they really have a great mix of it. And I think it really all comes together with Jackson Merrill, who's hit fifth or sixth the entire season. When you have the ability to hit a guy like that, who's been 800 OPS and hitting 290 the entire year, that just shows you how deep this team is. They play good defense. They hit the ball around the ballpark, and they're going to be a tough team to beat come October, which is next week. And I'm looking forward to watching them play. They move up two spots in my rankings. Number three.
Well, here's the big three. We'll start it off with the Yankees. They're going to stay put here, but they have been one of the hottest teams in baseball. Also, basically ever since the Aaron Judge slump stopped, 9-3 in that time. Looks like if they win this series against Baltimore coming up, the one seed is going to be all locked up for them.
Yeah, I have the Yankees as my number three team as well, too. The only AL team in my top five right now. They do not move from our last rankings, and neither do the top two teams as well, too. The Yankees look like the best team in the AL. They have the best player in the AL. And they have the third best player in the AL as well, too, in Juan Soto. This team, just including Jazz Chisholm at the All-Star break or the trade deadline, was probably the best thing they could do because it just provides so much more length to their lineup. Austin Wells, I think, also kind of heated up around that time as well, too. Giancarlo Stanton having a quietly really good year is big as well. This team feels good. This team feels very Yankee-like as we go into October. On to number two.
Number two, I got the Phils. Once again, staying put. They've been around 500 for the last 2 months, but the power's still there. They've still got 93 wins, still a shot for that top win percentage in MLB. JT is back now. They have one of the most dangerous pitching staffs in baseball. Things are still looking good for them. They're still healthy.
Yeah, I got the Phillies as my number two team as well, too. I saw a tweet a couple of weeks ago about just how bad Taiwan Walker's been, and one of the biggest replies to that tweet was, hey, you're only going to start four guys in the playoffs, and you already know who those four guys are going to be for Philadelphia. It's Wheeler, Nola, Sanchez, and Suarez. Those are their four. Nobody else is sniffing that four. Their bullpen is not something I completely love. I think there's some flaws in there, but they do have a couple of really good back-end guys that I completely trust. The lineup has that whoever, whenever mentality. Maybe hasn't done that in, you know, the last couple of months, but I think once we get to October, and as we've seen in the past few years, they know how to turn it on. Red October is a huge thing, and it's completely real. Citizens Bank may be the toughest place to play as an opposing team in baseball, especially in October. Number one.
Still the Doyers at the top spot. It's funny because it seems like everyone on the squad except for Shohei has kind of been on cruise control. But that's kind of perfect after what's happened these past couple of years. You want that top of the lineup to be ready for the postseason. That's kind of all that matters right now. We'll worry about the pitching later. At least that's my philosophy with the Dodgers, because they might put up 13 runs a game. And we all know what happened with Texas when they caught fire last year, even though they didn't, pick it up again this year. That one ring, I think, is okay with them.
Yeah. I also have the Dodgers in my number one spot. Like I said, the top three teams remain unchanged in mine, and it seems to be the same way in Skyler's.
Yeah.
93 and 63 is the best record in baseball. It's a shame that we're not going to get to see a 100-win team this year. It'll be the first time since 2014 that that's happened. But we have a chance to not see a 97-win team also, which is also kind of crazy to think about. I don't know the last time that happened, because in 2014, the Angels, I think, had 98 wins. Regardless, the Dodgers, best team in baseball. They have, you know, the top three that you could just make in a story and you wouldn't even believe it, with Shohei, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman. They have more impact in the bottom half of the order than they've had in years past as well, too, which I think is super important for building a contender and building a World Series champion. I like their bullpen. Their starting rotation can be a little bit at times, but they have so many other pieces around it that you got to trust it, especially if you're the number one seed into the playoffs and you don't have to, you know, play four games out of seven in Citizens Bank, and you just, you know, you got the games at Chavez Ravine instead. On to the NFL power rankings, Skyler. Do you have anybody off of your top 15 that you want to talk about?
You know, I tried really hard not to overreact, but I still ended up with five teams off the list. That's the Dolphins, the Rams, the Chargers, the Bears, and the Bengals.
Yeah, I also have five teams off of my list as well, too. I think it's interesting contrasting how we make the MLB and NFL power rankings, because you can kind of react to things with so much less information. Because we see these MLB teams play every single night, see the NFL teams only once a week. So there's going to be a lot more change in mind than there is in the MLB ones, especially at this point in the season. So the teams that are off of my list are six different teams, actually. It's Indianapolis, who is at 15, the Bears, who are at 13, Cincinnati, who is at 12, the Rams, who are at 10. I believe they're probably the 16th or 17th team right now. Dallas, who is at 8, and then Miami, who is at number 6. So number 15, Skyler, who do you choose?
We'll start it off with the Falcons. It's a 1-2, but a pretty competitive 1-2. Specifically, Sunday night against Kansas City, they had a couple of shots to win this one. They're just not really clicking on all cylinders offensively, but the defense so much better with Raheem Morris. We got to watch out for these guys, I think.
Number 15 for me is going to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, moving down one spot from the last rankings. If they won against Denver, they would have been on track for a top 10 spot this week. But with that weird loss, I got to move them down a little bit. I like this team a lot still, I think is something I do got to say. But that loss against Denver just completely puzzles me, because there isn't a good reason to really poke at it except for Bo Nix just dicing them up a little bit. Number 14.
A good friend of Atlanta. They'll see each other this weekend. It's the New Orleans Saints at 2-1. Not on the list for probably both of us the first week. But, hey, man, it's Philly. Philly's tough. It was only a three-point game. They just didn't really have the ball for that long. Philly kind of ground and pounded them with Saquon in the second half. And we'll see, whoever wins this next game might get a good bump, or they just stay the same. You know, it's the South. That's how it goes sometimes.
Yeah. Number 14 for me is going to be the Atlanta Falcons. One of the few 1-2 teams that are on my top 15 this week. Weirdly, I am quietly impressed with their start, even though it is 1-2. I think they played the Chiefs better than we've seen a lot of teams play them in the past year or two. They obviously beat the Philadelphia Eagles in Philly on Monday Night Football in week two. Week one, the loss versus the Steelers looked bad then, but with how the Steelers are right now, it looks a bit better considering how good that defense has been in Pittsburgh. I'm sure that we'll talk about that in a few minutes as well too. But Atlanta, I still really like. I think the offense was due to take a couple of weeks to really kick in, especially with the new quarterback and some new coordinators in there as well too. I think they'll be just fine once we get to a week eight or week nine. This offense is going to be rolling by then. They have the running back, the wide receiver, the tight end, the quarterback to really make a good offense work. Number 13.
At 13, I got the Seattle Seahawks. First time on the list this year at 3-0. It's no one really in particular that stepped up. Obviously, Geno has been much better this season so far, but really, it's their ability to come back, right? They had to come back in New England in overtime. They completely shut down Miami's backup quarterback, of course, and I kind of like the McDonald scheme. You know, it's another team. Guess what happens if you don't throw a bunch of picks and you're able to run the ball a little bit? You're going to have a better chance to win against bad teams. So good for them. Good start.
Number 13 for me is going to be where I slot the undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers right now. Only 26 points allowed in three games. Absolutely ridiculous. Sure, the teams that they've played have been, you know, partially a Justin Herbert-less Chargers, a Bo Nix-led Broncos, and then also the Falcons in their first game with these whole bunch of moving parts. You can't discredit what they've done so far, though. Only reason why they're not higher despite being 3-0 is I don't have a lot of faith in the offense still. There isn't a ton of star power there. I know Justin Fields has been good at holding the ball in his first three games as a Pittsburgh Steeler, but I do not really like the pieces that are around them to be sustained for, you know, a stretch if they are going to play the Bills or are going to play the Chiefs, which you would have to play if you call yourself good in the AFC. Number 12.
Though I do have the Cowboys still on the list, even though they're 1-2, dropping down from the five spot, I think there's plenty of time for them. I think they can get ahead of Philly. I don't see a massive gap between all the NFC teams right now. So that's why I didn't bump them down below the teams from the South. I feel like it's just a weird time to be a part of the Cowboys offense right now, early in the season.
Number 12 is going to be where I slot the New Orleans Saints. Obviously, a tough loss against the Eagles this past week where they kind of felt like they had it, and then Dallas Goedert just had that big play down the sideline, kind of reminiscent of that George Kittle play a couple of years ago where he just took it way longer down the exact same sideline that set up a Niners victory. Regardless, they lose to Philly. I still feel confident about this team. The defense is still really, really good, and it looked good against Philly as well, too, for the most part. Offense had a rough week, but I think they'll be just fine if they win two out of every three games. Number 11.
Number 11 is where I got the undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers. I had them as the first ones out last time, the 16 spot. I can't really move them up much higher than this for a lot of the same reasons as you, right? Justin Fields, so far, so good, but they haven't really been tested yet. We're going to see him play Dallas pretty soon. We're going to see the trap game in Las Vegas. They got the Jets on Sunday night. And Washington has a pretty good young quarterback, too, coming up on their schedule. So we'll see if they're for real.
Number 14 on my list was unranked. Number 13 on my list was unranked. Number 12 on my list was unranked. And number 11 is as well, too, with the Green Bay Packers at 2-1 so far through the first three games of the season. I think one of the reasons why they went on the list last time for me was Love got hurt.
Yes.
Yeah, Malik Willis is not going to do the job for them. What we've seen in the first two games from him has been remarkable. And I know we credited LaFleur a lot last week. And obviously a ton of credit goes to him, but Malik Willis, the steps that he's made from the time that we saw him play in Tennessee and was just completely awful, has been great to see for him. I'm happy for him. I'm good to see that he's getting success because I was a fan of him in college. And Green Bay seems to be playing good ball right now. They have good weapons. They have a good defense. Maybe not the best teams that they've played, but they can't really control that stuff. They've done it well with their backup quarterback and sitting at 2-1, you told Packers fans that 2 weeks ago, they would have been extremely happy. And I'm sure they are right. Number 10.
Number 10 is a team I'm very familiar with, the New York Jets, bumping up from the 14 spot. I mean, Roger said it today on the McAfee show. He's like, hey guys, don't overreact. You know, after the San Francisco game, he said this right after the game, you know, they're going to suck. They're going to have us down in the power rankings. Then we're going to win two in a row and have a short week and everyone's going to love us. But we got to stay calm. We got to stay in the middle. We can't overreact. Some big games coming up. London against Minnesota, Buffalo Monday night, Pittsburgh Sunday night. Going to be a massive litmus test for this team because Rodgers can't do it all by himself, right? Some guys are going to have to step up eventually.
Number 10 for me, moving down three spots from the last rankings, is going to be where I have the Houston Texans. Disappointing performance against the Minnesota Vikings on Sunday. However, what Brian Flores has been able to do against young quarterbacks in his career was evident on Sunday. He just blitzed the hell out of C.J. Stroud, the Vikings. I'm not going to get into them. But the Texans specifically looked bad. They did not have a good game on defense either. Defense that looked good in the first two games. I think they'll bounce back and be just fine, but it was a performance on Sunday that I was not expecting, and I definitely would not be proud of if I was anybody on that team, and I'm sure they're not. Regardless, still 2-1, still in a good spot, and I think they'll be fine in the long term. Number 9.
Yeah, number 9 is where I got Houston. I'm going to keep them at the same exact spot. I'm going to try not to overreact, but even though they're at 2-1, they're not playing at their full potential right now. Good thing for them, they got a little tune-up game against Jacksonville. Hopefully that'll get them ready to play Buffalo after that.
Number 9 for me, not moving any spots, weirdly enough, because the team's in a different spot than they were 2 weeks ago, is where I slot the New York Jets. Good couple of weeks. I guess it's kind of just the faith I had in them 2 weeks ago, even with the loss against the Niners. I mean, you said it. I'm not really going to go into detail about the Jets because I know that's kind of your thing there. But the team looks a lot better than what it did 2 weeks ago. And obviously the vibe around it is a lot better as well, too.
Yeah.
Number 8.
Number 8, I got the Minnesota Vikings. 3-0, unranked last week. Pretty awesome, man. Pretty awesome. Everyone knew Sam Darnold had a little bit of this in the tank. He just needed to get into the right situation. And, I mean, honestly, it's kind of like what would happen if he was on the Jets today. It's a great defense. There's some pretty good weapons around. And if he gets the ball out quick and doesn't have to think too hard, things are going to work for them. I'm really curious on what's going to happen in London. I really have no idea what's going to happen Jets, Minnesota, but really similar teams right now.
Number 8 for me is going to be where I slot the Seattle Seahawks, a perfect 3-0 in their first three games. And like you said, I also like the Mike McDonald scheme that they got going on. I think they got a lot of playmakers there. And even without Kenneth Walker, they've been able to run the ball down whoever they're playing's throats pretty damn well, whether it's Charbonnet or Walker. They've built their identity in three games. That's something that you really like to see from a new head coach. And to be 3-0 with every other team in their division being 1-2 has got to be a good feeling for that Seattle squad. Number seven.
Number seven is where I have the Baltimore Ravens. I dropped them down from the three spot. I don't mean this in an overreacting way. I just think even though they finally did get their first win of the season against a tough Dallas team on the road, I didn't really like how they did it. They kind of abandoned the passing game. They became really predictable, and that's worrying me a little bit. I'm sure at some point they're going to let Lamar cook or whatever version of that will get them more wins, but I had to drop them down a little bit.
Number seven is going to be where I slot the Detroit Lions. Good win against the Arizona Cardinals to bounce back, avenge that loss against the Buccaneers 2 weeks ago. They do move down two spots in my rankings, but this is one of the teams I have a ton of faith in. I'm not going to overreact from a loss 2 weeks ago. I think they're going to be just fine. Just a little bit of a hiccup in the offense right now, not getting Laporte the ball. They spread it around to some other guys, but just kind of I wouldn't say a bad start at all, but just an awkward start and not as dominant as I was expecting in the first three games from Detroit. Number six.
Number six is where I got the Green Bay Packers all the way up from a third honorable mention, the 17 or 18 spot last week. And that's because this team is completely unfazed right now. Malik Willis was unplayable in Tennessee. All it took was to sit for a little bit, learn a new offense, learn a couple new things. And in his second start back, he looks like a completely new guy. They can ground and pound all day if they want to, like a Baltimore. But seriously, I love this passing attack with the four young receivers. So I'm not worried about them.
Number six for me is going to be where I slot the 1-2 Baltimore Ravens. It was a bad start for Baltimore, but to get a win over Dallas on Sunday was huge. They moved down two spots in my rankings, but I still got a ton of faith in this team because they do have the MVP as their quarterback. They have Derrick Henry as their running back, and they have a good defense as well, too. Maybe hasn't shown too well, and it's taken a little bit of time to gel this year, but I think Baltimore would be just fine. And at least they're not 0-3 like the Cincinnati Bengals. Number five.
Number five, I'm going to go with Philadelphia here, moving up a spot. Now I think it's safe to put them over Dallas because Philly hasn't really gotten embarrassed yet, right? Jalen Hurts, very confusing start for me. I don't know how long I can trust this guy for, but in the regular season, this offense is going to be pretty unstoppable.
Number five for me is going to be where I slot the San Francisco 49ers. A 1-2 start is not what I think anybody expected with this team. I know they've gone through some of the most injuries in the NFL so far, losing McCaffrey, losing Debo, losing Kittle, losing Trent Williams a little bit. Actually, no, he's been fine. One of the few guys that has been healthy, but Fred Warner's been dealing with some stuff. I know Bosa has been dealing with some stuff as well, too. Regardless, this team should not have lost to the Rams. The Rams are about just as, if not more, injured than what the Niners were, and they completely choked that game away. It's a bad loss. However, I still got a ton of faith in that team because they've done it before. They only moved down two spots. Kind of my whole 5-7, Baltimore, Detroit, and San Francisco, really good teams, just maybe not the greatest starts to the regular season. Number four.
Number four is where I have the Niners. I'm only going to drop them down one spot, but 100% on the same page with you. The injuries are tough, but at the end of the day, the tie goes to the quarterback and the coach running the system, and these guys are going to be back. You know, they beat the snot out of the Jets, and I don't think I'm just saying this as a Jets fan, but that's massive win that they're going to go back and look at. Be like, let's do some more of that. Let's run the ball a little more, even though Brock is having a great year. Let's keep things under control.
Number four for me is going to be where I put the 3-0 Minnesota Vikings. And when you look at going into the season, this team felt like it was a quarterback away from being something decent. And what Sam Darnold has done has been completely remarkable. But I don't think Brian Flores and their defense is getting enough credit. They have 16 sacks in the first three games of the season. They've had at least five sacks in every single game. to start off the year. That's something I don't think has been done in a long time. They've only allowed 30 points, and they've played fucking good teams, too. They played the Niners, they played the Texans, and I'm blanking on who they played in week one. They play in week one. Oh, the Giants. But yeah. Regardless, they still, you know, took down two of the best offenses in the league and beat them both pretty handily, I'd feel like. So Minnesota, I feel like, is legit, especially if Sam Darnold continues to play this way. And how can you not be happy for that? They were unranked, too, by the way. So I guess it's technically a plus 11, plus 12, whatever you want to call it, because they definitely weren't. Nah, they weren't number 15 or 16 on my list, you know, 2 weeks ago either. Number three,
I have the Lions moving up, actually, from the four spot at 2-1. Another team that's not really playing at their full potential, but to come out alive 2-1 when Jared Goff has like the 28th ranked QBR so far this season, he's been horrible. And all he needs to do is be an average quarterback for this offense to be super high-flying, because they fixed the defense, and they're ready for the playoffs.
Number three for me is going to be where I slot the Philadelphia Eagles, the highest-ranking NFC team on my list. I really like this team. The loss against Atlanta was obviously super tough, but a good bounce-back victory against the Saints, who have been lighting up offenses or lighting up defenses in the first two games of the season. Saquon looks to be the number one back in the league right now, especially with their offensive line and the other weapons that they have around them. I'm happy to see that as a Saquon owner in fantasy. Hopefully Jalen Hurts just decides to lock it in a little bit, because they need him to be good in order to win a Super Bowl, which has got to be their goal this year. Number two.
So number two, we got the Buffalo Bills up from the seven spot. I feel like we're both believers, but not necessarily number one offense in the league believers. And we might be seeing a little bit of the Patrick Ewing theory with Buffalo this season. When Josh Allen doesn't have to worry about targeting Stephon Diggs 16 times every game, turns out he can read the defense at a ridiculous clip. I mean, he destroyed Jacksonville's man defense last night with his legs too. Once again, the big test for these guys, it's going to be week six, Monday Night Football at MetLife Stadium. Massive litmus test for both of those teams.
I think they got a big test this week with the Ravens. And then they have the Texans too next week as well too. But still, week six is going to be big, of course. The Bills are also my number two team to move up nine spots. And Josh Allen has got to be the MVP right now, right? I mean, this guy has been ridiculously dominant. The defense has been good, but 112 points in the first three games of the season is the most in the league except for New Orleans. And they've had some better quality opponents as well too, in my opinion. Like you said, just taking away Stephon Diggs kind of just gave Josh Allen a breath of fresh air. There's less ego on the team. He doesn't have to force the ball to anyone. He can read the defense and make the plays he wants to make and kind of just be off script. And when you don't know where the ball's going against Buffalo, that makes it even tougher. Because you've always knew that Stephon Diggs was going to have to get his targets. You knew that. So you could kind of play shade that way and still kind of get away with some things. Now, Josh Allen's got the speed. He's got a good running back in James Cook. He's got all these different aspects that he's able to tap into a little bit. And I think that's partially one of the reasons why we haven't seen, you know, a 10 catch, 150 yard, two touchdown game from any one of his receivers. But pretty much everybody on that team has like two or three touchdowns. It feels like, whether it's Shakir, Kincaid, even Ty Johnson got a touchdown yesterday, which is kind of crazy to see. The Bills look to be as good as they've been in the Josh Allen era. And that's saying something, because they've had some really damn good teams. And Josh Allen looks to be as good as he's been in the Josh Allen era.
Yeah, perfect timing.
Number one. Yeah,
for real. No, still, though, that's why I'm so excited for this game. I don't mean to disrespect Baltimore. Of course, that'll be a great game. But those are my boys. But unfortunately for us, Kansas City stays at the one spot for it's about 2.5 years in a row now. At the top spot in the power rankings, because they've been able to take care of business despite all the injuries. Specifically, Pacheco's broken leg was a nasty one, but we know from last season, this team is not going to roll over. They play the Chargers this week, who might be missing Derwin, Herbert, Joe Alt, and Josh Palmer all in the same game. So I don't expect them to score any points if that's the deal.
Yeah, I'm going with Kansas City as a number one team pretty easily here. And that's no shot on Buffalo or any of the other 3-0 teams right now. Kansas City has the football gods on their side, and they also have the referees on their fucking side as well, too. We saw that Sunday where a pass interference call was not called against them. When just a week ago, they got a pass interference call for them that was way worse, in my opinion. Yeah. Regardless, Kansas City's still really good, damn good. I'm not going to use the refs as a complete scapegoat because they still would probably be close to 3-0, if not, you know, even with the calls going that way. It's just funny to see that. It's funny to see that the NFL suspended Derwin James before playing the Kansas City Chiefs as well, too, which is kind of funny. I don't want to come off as the guy that's like doubting the Chiefs and all this stuff, because I've had them as number one in my rankings pretty much consistently for the last 3 years at this point. They are the best team in football. They will continue to be the best team in football, and they will, you know, barring anything crazy, be the first team ever to win 3 in a row. I don't know if there's ever been a team to 3-peat, but
yeah.
So number one there. On to halftime.
Yeah. Halftime is where we got all our college football talk this week. And, you know, I wish we could start this off on a positive note. This was supposed to be the resurgence of the Pac-12, because we heard some rumors. I don't know if you were all locked in on this conversation, but as a big Pac-12 fan, I know you used to be. We thought we were going to get some good news. Turns out they went from plan A to plan S very quickly in the order of operations there, because, well, it turns out Reggie Bush sued the Pac-12 right when the Pac-12 was about to bring in new teams. The Mountain West is now also suing them, and the American declined the additions of Memphis, Tulane, North Texas, and UTSA. So none of those teams will be able to join the Pac-12 in 2 years from now. Luckily for the Pac-12, they did get enough football programs. They got all the state schools from the Mountain West, basically. And I don't think this suing of the Mountain West is going to lead to anything, because also Gonzaga will be coming. So that's massive for basketball. It's going to be a really good basketball conference, too. Just really weird stuff. I just imagine the Pac-12 getting sued by three different parties all at the same time while they're trying to make all these deals to free up money for these schools. So unfortunately, we're going to have to delay our Pac-12 conversation for another year. After that, you know, I was going to do a Heisman watch again, but there was only one guy who played past halftime on my top six. That was Travis Hunter. He made a big play to beat Baylor. But I feel like we're okay skipping this week. Nothing changed. Cam Ward beat the crap out of South Florida. So how about we get into a little preview here? Speaking of Cam Ward, they're the Friday night game against VaTech. They should be in the clear. It's a minus 19 so far. The offense has been zooming all year long. So we'll get into Saturday. Some very good rank versus rank matchups. We'll start it off number 20 Oklahoma State at number 23 Kansas State. It's the biggest game for the Big 12 this week, pretty much. And both these teams just looking to stay alive. Whoever loses this game, probably not getting in the playoff, no matter what, which is unfortunate. At 12:30, I got another ranked versus ranked game. And that's number 15 Louisville at number 16 Notre Dame. Both schools still alive for the playoff as well. You kind of need a representative from that area. And we're going to do our top 12 predictions right after this, too. So we'll get more into that for sure. 4:30, another ranked. Big Ten matchup this time. It's the great defense of Illinois, number 19, traveling to number 9 Penn State, Happy Valley. A real test for Drew Aller. Is he actually an NFL quarterback? We'll find out. Probably this game, maybe not though. And of course, I mean, how can we not talk about number 2 Georgia at number 4 Alabama? Right now, Georgia's a 2-point favorite on the road, which is pretty crazy when you think about all the neutral site games we could possibly get in the SEC when we get into playoff season. Really excited for this one. I didn't really make my pick yet, but probably think Georgia's the better team as of right now. Alabama's new coach hasn't really been tested yet. And I will mention, too, the biggest game for me Saturday night, 7 o'clock, FS1, undefeated Washington State at number 25, Boise State. Let's keep those playoff dreams alive, baby.
Here we go. Moving on to the last thing that we got in halftime. We did this 2 weeks ago as well, too. It's titled, Who's Your 12 in the College Football Playoff? We kind of broke it up into three different parts last time, and I think that's probably the way we can do it again here. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about our conference winners in the Power Four. We'll talk about the seven teams that go in after that, and then the group of five team that makes it in as well, too. Scott, I'll let you go first. Who are your four conference winners?
We'll start off with Georgia. I say they do beat Bama this week. It should be a really great game. Carson Beck really needs to have a good game for his own sake and for his squad's sake to get that first round bye here. After that, I like Ohio State. They haven't been tested. It's one of the worst strength of schedules so far, so we don't really know. But as of right now, they're my number two out of the Big Ten. Number three, Miami from the ACC. Miami looks like a legit contender, and they're in one of the downtrending conferences of college football so far this year. And number four, I'm sticking with Utah to win the Big 12. If it's Isaac Wilson, the freshman, I am a little less confident that they'll win a playoff game, but the defense is so good. They should go undefeated in the conference.
My 12, starting off with the four, number one, Georgia, best team in the SEC, in my opinion. I think they're better than Texas. And I think they beat Bama as well. I also just have a bit more faith in them, especially right now with Quinn Ewers being hurt for Texas. Number two, I also have Ohio State. Seems to have the easiest schedule in the Big Ten. Their only big test is really at Penn State in about 4 or 5 weeks. I think they should be fine there regardless. Number three, the team from the ACC, I decided to go with Miami. Cam Ward looks to be as posed as anybody we've ever seen in the pocket or outside of the pocket in college football history. He looks really damn good. And I think they are probably the best team in the ACC pretty clearly right now. And then my Big 12 rep, I decided to go with BYU. The Holy All right. War could decide the Big 12 championship and who ends up getting in there, Utah versus BYU. BYU just had a great game this past weekend, get an upset victory. And I wouldn't be shocked if they end up, not running the table necessarily, but being one of the better teams in the Big 12 for the remainder of the season. Mm. Next up, 5-11.
All right, so we'll start off the five spot with Texas. They are number one right now. They have a lot of experience playing SEC schools, but it is their first year in the conference. Quinn Ewers is banged up. Either way, they're going to be in the playoff, I think. So definitely an exciting development for them. Number six, I am going to go with Oregon. Just taking another look at their schedule. Things are not as difficult as I thought they would be for them. I think they can beat a team like Penn State pretty easily because they're not even, cracking the surface of this new offense yet with Dylan Gabriel. Number seven is where I have Bama. It's no disrespect. I just think if they end up losing two games, maybe missing out on the conference championship, they won't be a top five team. That's just how it works. Number eight, Tennessee, though, another SEC school, so far looking like maybe the best defense in the nation. It'd be interesting to see what happens when they start playing Georgia and Bama themselves. Number nine, Penn State. I think a one or two loss Penn State would still get into the tournament. They have a lot of street cred, if you will. Always a nasty defense with James Franklin. Number 10, I have Ole Miss, another SEC school. And that's because last year, Mizzou was up here too, even though they were like fifth or sixth in the SEC. The committee does not care. They love the SEC. And my last spot is going to go to the winner of Notre Dame USC. Little weird thinking here, but my philosophy, these teams are going to also win out the rest of the schedules, even though they had some disappointing losses. Notre Dame, again, it's a brand new system, really run heavy. USC, kind of the opposite, right? I still like Miller Moss. I know when we get to draft season, we'll talk way more about him, trust me, because I still think he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks I've seen so far this year in a down year for sure. But the winner of that game, I have making it in.
My number five team I have is Texas. They have a bit of a I don't want to say a light schedule in the SEC, but lighter than a Tennessee or Alabama, in my opinion. I think their only loss could be versus Georgia. And if that's the case, I think it's reasonable for them to be the number five seed. Next up, I have Tennessee as my number six team. I think they beat Bama. I think they probably lose to Georgia. But if that goes that way, then I think they definitely deserve a six spot. Number seven is going to be where I have Alabama. Probably the toughest schedule out of any of these you know, SEC teams, because they play Georgia, they play Tennessee, they play Missouri, they play LSU, they play Oklahoma. With three of those games being on the road, Tennessee, LSU, and Oklahoma, I think they're, you know, on pace to probably lose two of those. And I think that probably slot them at the seventh spot because they are, it's still an SEC team and would have some, you know, the losses wouldn't be bad, in my opinion. Number eight is going to be where I slot Oregon, the first Big Ten team in my 5-11. One of the most explosive offenses. We kind of saw them start to get going. Like you said, it's still, you know, haven't really scratched the surface with Dylan Gabriel and what that offense can hold. But definitely one of the more explosive and kind of more consistent offenses that we can expect in the second half of the season. Ole Miss is a team I have at number nine. They're kind of a wild card, in my opinion. They have a whole bunch of, I wouldn't say, they have a lot of unknown about them. And I think their schedule with LSU, Georgia, and Oklahoma can be tough. And I think they probably lose two of those games. But I still think Jackson Dart's one of the best quarterbacks in the nation. So him and Ole Miss at nine being there is completely okay to me. Number 10. Another SEC team is going to be where I slot Mizzou. Kind of a confusing squad for me because they don't really have the quarterback on the highest level as some of the other guys, I feel like. But their schedule plays super weird. A&M this upcoming, not this week, next week, because they're going to a bye this week. But they have at number four Alabama and at or versus Oklahoma. I think they definitely lose to Bama, but I don't think their schedule is strong enough, even as a one-loss team, to be, you know, better than a Tennessee or Texas or an Alabama. If one of those teams is one loss squad. Number 11, I have my second Big Ten team in Penn State. I'm not super confident in Drew Aller, but I am confident in their schedule and only getting really have to play versus Ohio State. I know they have USC in there as well too, but I'm more confident in that team than I am in USC as of right now. So I have Penn State as my number 11. Which leaves us with one spot and definitely the most intriguing spot in the college football playoff, the 12 group of five. I guess Notre Dame doesn't really count as that team, right? So
yeah.
Who do you have there?
I'm really hoping that there is no curse of the 25 spot because I am going to stick with Boise. Obviously we saw Northern Illinois, just a really upsetting loss to Buffalo. You can't do that, man. And that's going to kill their season right there. At least for now. But Boise State's got a couple of relatively big games for this spot coming up. It's Washington State and UNLV, who are also themselves still alive for this spot. And of course, there's JMU. If they go 13-0, just beat everyone by 30 in the Sun Belt, they'll probably get it over Boise. But I gotta roll with my guys here. Ashton Jeanty is impossible to tackle. He's like Devin Singletary on steroids. I guess that would be Doug Martin, right? From the same school, but a little muscle hamster going there. But I'm really excited to see if Malachi Nelson gets some more looks too, because he looked like the Slim Reaper out there when he played in the second half of a blowout, like almost like CJ Stroud did when he was really young.
My number 12 team group of five squad is not going to be Boise, unfortunately. I decided to go with Army as my pick, and I think there's a definite real path to it. Their one game against a ranked opponent right now is to be Notre Dame on November 23rd. If they win that game and they're still undefeated, that's when we really get into tough talks there of them being a legitimate team. They also play Navy, of course, on December 14th, you know, the game when that's the only game on. And that game could be legitimately for the last spot. And I saw a TikTok about it that makes a lot of sense. So both these teams are undefeated right now. They've looked the best that they've been in a long time. And there's a chance that these two teams could play for a college football playoff spot in that game, especially if Navy's good. I think that would make the Army win even better in that scenario. So maybe ideally you're, you know, number 21 Army versus number 23 Navy at that point.
Yeah.
Then you have two ranked wins on your schedule instead of one. And that bumps up your schedule. And I think everybody would be quite all right with having Army in the College Bowl playoff, because what more American thing can you do?
And we know the committee loves the American too. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, the committee bumped up Tulane to like 7 or 8 and they smacked USC. So they're a little bit maybe ahead of themselves.
Yeah.
With that one.
Yeah. But that's my 12 right now. We'll get into that again in a couple of weeks, kind of do a status check there. But as of right now, we've got to go to our bets. And
it's
I wish I could just mock draft season, man.
I thought about it, but it just, it seemed like a little too much for this week.
Yeah. But last week in our bets was not a good week. We went 0-4. NFL season right now is just striking us over the top of the head. I had Tampa Bay -6.5 as my layup. Skyler had Houston -2.5 as his layup. They both did not hit. This week I have Washington +3 versus the Arizona Cardinals. I like Washington, maybe not to win, but I think they lose by a field goal at most and cover there.
I'm going to go with Cincinnati -4.5 at Carolina for this one. Cincinnati's 0-3, Carolina riding high. But here's the thing about Andy Dalton. He's a straight-up gunslinger. He had 3 turnover-worthy plays against the Raiders, good for second most in the league. So I'm not saying he got lucky, but it's that's what happens when you have a gunslinger. You live and you die with the deep ball.
Last week, bowl predictions weren't good either. I had Arizona +130. It was close, but not close enough. Skyler had Cal over FSU. FSU gets their first win of the season. That's a rough loss for Cal, because especially with the talk that was happening over this past week. In that category. This week I have Minnesota over Green Bay. Green Bay is favored by a few points. I do think Minnesota has enough to get a victory here. The defense, especially if it's against Malik Willis, I trust a ton in Brian Flores, considering what he did to Brock Purdy and CJ Stroud, two of the best quarterbacks in the league. Nothing against Malik Willis. I just don't think he's cut out for that Brian Flores defense.
My bold prediction, I'm going to go with college football again, and even bigger odd break here, +200 for the USF Bulls to win at Tulane. Vegas doesn't really like USF right now because they have 2 blowout losses on their resume, but they're to Alabama and Miami. So I'm not worried about that. Tulane's already had a quarterback change this season. I'm going to ride with my guy, Byron Brown from the Bulls.
That's going to do it though for episode 211. Crazy week as always. We'll have more baseball, more football next week. Playoff predictions in the MLB, those are always fun. And yeah, you got any parting notes?
Yeah, other than I'm excited for mock draft season. I'll tell you. I mean, I've been scheming for your team too, because I know, and again, I'm not trying to be a dick, but when there is a quarterback problem specifically, or just any kind of problem that has you picking in the top half of the draft, you don't want to mess it up. So I want to help you find your future superstars. And that's all. Maybe a couple weeks out from mock draft, but I'll send you any updates I have. Very big week for college football. Excited for it all. Let's beat Bo Nix. That's all I got.